I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Philip Spiegelman. Philip is the principal of International Sales Group ISG World in Miami. He is one of the original team that brought the condo concept to Miami. He provided housing to the Mariel Boatlift refugees, opened global markets when most were selling only to snowbirds, and this included opening offices in Central and South American cities and forming broker relationships across the miles. Philip started and nurtured several professional organizations in South Florida and now is involved in China. Philip, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Thank you, Dave. My pleasure to be with you.
So you had a long and fascinating career, and I'm wondering if you could start off by telling us a little bit about kind of how you got started and what caused you to move your business career in the direction that you did.
Well, my career started after college when I married my first wife. And her father at the time was one of the pioneers of the condominium concept here in South Florida. He invited me to join his organization and work with him. And I got probably the best education from the ground up that one could get, certainly way beyond anything you could get in school. And day by day, I watched and followed and learned how large high-rise condominium buildings were developed from concept to completion. So I had an opportunity to work in almost every discipline of the business, but the area that thrilled me, that excited me, that always kept my interest was the design, marketing, sale, and promotion of the projects themselves. So I had a front row seat and a great education from the very, very beginning, back in the late 60s, at a time when Miami was truly just a snowbird destination. And most of the clients and customers that came looking for a home in the sun were retirees from the Northeast. Today, 45 years later, we have a very different picture and a very different landscape and a much different city than when I arrived here originally.
So it sounds to me like you were one of the key players in changing what was going on in the residential real estate marketplace in South Florida.
Well, I can say that I had the opportunity to be part of the very beginning. What I learned and what I was able to put in practice gave me the opportunity to contribute to this industry significantly. I won't say that I was the guy that started it, but I certainly had the front row seat to watch it evolve and then contribute along the way.
Well, business is often lots of little pivots. And, the person who is credited with a breakthrough concept is often someone who is making some changes to something that's already in progress.
Ah, makes sense.
Yeah, and I wondered if you could talk a little bit about what was going on in the marketplace that caused the condo concept to catch on.
Well, it was a moment in time when people both had discretionary income, some savings and an interest in putting it to use. Real estate and the sun were always a great combination. So we had something that people clearly wanted. It was long before we started talking about baby boomers, but there was a whole generation of people that were reaching an age and looking to retire, and Florida was the magnet for that. So developing a product, a housing product that met their needs in truly mass quantities, became the thrust of the era from, well, I would say from the late 60s through and up to the recession of say 73, 74. So I saw a huge boom here in South Florida, not just in Miami, but the whole coast, of trying to meet that demand. So we had a market that was interested. We had a opportunity because the climate down here permitted for the development of large high-rise structures along the waterfront. And the whole industry really just blossomed with everything from luxury condominium towers on the ocean to huge golf course and club-type related communities further west. And all of them really at the time were targeting the same audience. And this industry really developed in you know, a huge deluge, if you will, right up to when we had a tremendous recession. I mean, when we talk about recession in terms of the most recent one, which was the most scary, but in 1973-74, the mortgage industry collapsed. And with it went the entire real estate market, not dissimilar to what we went through recently, except the dynamics were quite different. So there was a boom period, I would say, from the late 60s into the early to mid 70s that saw tremendous development along the coast and inland, and a tremendous influx of retirees from the Northeast. So that was the foundation. Call that the beginnings of the concept and the industry. Mm-hmm. Then we took a breath. We lived through a recession, and as often is the case, when the economic climate throughout the United States became more favorable, development began again. And that's been the history, really, of South Florida, from my experience. I've probably been through, I don't know, six or seven different recession cycles. So I've had the opportunity to see how that give and take, that flow, that ebb and flow have affected not only the industry, but the flow of people, where they came from, who they are, what was the composite makeup of people coming to Florida and looking for a place to live. And that changed drastically over the years. From, as I said, from a very Northeastern retiree type market to a very Latin American influenced market through including and up to today. And it was understanding that trend that really had a tremendous influence on the complexion of the industry that we have here. Because as the source of people, as the prospects that we marketed to changed, so did the product change. And what's interesting to observe is while we had a particular type of design and product that suited the buyers from the beginning of the industry, as we started to shift and focus our attention on buyers from around the world and particularly from Latin America, products started to shift and change too. More specifically to meet the demands and the tastes and the cultural aspects of what those people were looking for. So that was a big adjustment, and those were things that we paid close attention to. And as we began to see that that was going to be a significant market influencer for the future, by example, my partner and I, when we formed our company, International Sales Group, we saw that there was going to be significant business, not just from one country, but from almost every country out of Latin America. So at a time when there was no internet and there was no way of really determining and using your keyboard to find out what was happening in any particular city, we got on airplanes and we flew to the major cities in Latin America, Bogota, Caracas, Sao Paulo, Buenos Aires, Mexico City, Panama City, and we found people that were connected, people that had had access to individuals that were interested in buying. Not a typical brokerage situation like we have in the United States, but we identified people that had circles of influence and were able to reach the people that we felt would be our best prospects for the product that we were developing in South Florida. And that became the true beginnings for us is building a network that ultimately would funnel prospective buyers to our business interests here in South Florida. And for us, it was typically we felt that we added something to a typical developer's portfolio, if you will. developers are high stakes gamblers with big dreams, and they have to be highly organized and disciplined individuals. And they have one of two ways to go. They can hire an outside company like ours, or they can hire an in-house staff. And most developers tend not to want to do that. They don't want to hire and manage the in-house staff for sales, marketing, promotion, advertising themselves. They prefer to sub that interest out to companies that have more experience and a better handle on how to actually manage that aspect of the business. And that's where the opportunity for our company really grew. As South Florida began to boom again in the 80s and into the early 90s, it became clear that there was not only a long-term and increasing development cycle, but that we were drawing on a much bigger audience, a truly world audience of interest. And by the way, just to fast forward, what's fascinating was my partner and I, after the collapse of the world economy in 2008 and 2009, we sat around in our office and we couldn't figure out really what the truth of the market was. There was so much rumor and exaggeration as to what the inventories that had been built and how many apartments were still available. So we went ahead and we created something we call the Miami Report, which was our way of documenting statistically, one, how and where the market stood, but also identifying trends that were influencers here in South Florida that were going to affect our industry going forward. And today, what I find particularly fascinating is that Florida is, or Miami, I should say specifically, Miami is considered the sixth most important city in the world for people of high net worth. And that's typically described as people with a net worth of over 30 million. It is the number six city in the world for people with that kind of money where they want to buy and live. Now, in 2009, in the depths of the beginning of the recession, Miami was ranked number 29 in the world. So in a short time, Miami has risen to number six and rising for various reasons, not the least of which is great value, all the sun and weather that we always speak about in Miami, and a truly growing, multifaceted, sophisticated cultural scene that covers art, performance, theater, the best shopping in the world, certainly on par with anywhere in the world, and that is expanding in an amazing rate. So we now have, I think, when you combine the weather, which everybody identified with, we now have business that wants to be here, major Fortune 500 companies, hedge fund managers who come here from New York, where the tax basis is much more attractive and they can manage the money of their clients from anywhere in the world. We have, by the way, in the next 12 months, the Panama Canal expansion will be completed. That's going to connect the largest shipping super tankers in the world to be able to come through the Panama Canal, and the Port of Miami is actually one of the two places on the eastern United States that will be able to accommodate these super tankers. So we've opened up Miami on so many different levels that the development industry has changed as a result, and we're now producing some of the most spectacular buildings in the world. Our only markets are not just wealthy, high net worth people, but we are producing buildings that attract people from various different income levels and appeal to European, South Americans. And now we're starting to explore the connection with China. So it's a very exciting moment. It's been a evolving industry and market, to the point today where we're working literally with the best architects in the world, designing buildings for our developer clients that appeal to anybody. I mean, truly to anybody. And I just got back from Shanghai and Beijing, and you're seeing, you know, great amounts of construction, but certainly nothing that's any more interesting or more spectacular than the buildings and designs that are being constructed right now here in South Florida. So we have literally over a period of all these years watched an industry grow meet the needs of various cultures and ethnic mix, if you will, from around the world. And today being considered really one of the top locations for anybody to find not just great value, but everything that goes with it. So it's a fascinating and exciting time here in South Florida, and it's a particularly exciting time for my company.
Well, Philip, it's you certainly have had a long and storied career. You know, on this show, Smashing the Plateau, we focus on how leaders of existing businesses can overcome roadblocks that that come and seem to prevent them from scaling, especially when there is a market for what it is they offer. And you've touched on a few issues that I'm wondering if we could spend some time talking about. So you talked about changing economic situations, changing demographics, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering what you can say about the keys to successfully navigating those kinds of roadblocks, and at the same time making sure that you can capitalize on opportunities that may be out there, and often these roadblocks prevent you from really being able to fully see and appreciate where the opportunities are. You know, especially in an economic downturn can put a real squeeze on your ability to be able to take on something new, but at the same time, economic downturns are when the biggest opportunities often present themselves.
That's right? So true. That is so true. I mean, there's never an ill wind that doesn't blow something good to somebody.
Exactly. So I wonder what you can share about your own experience navigating these kinds of roadblocks and how to overcome them, how to deal with the often the emotional roadblocks that we as leaders face. You know, there's a lot of fear that's involved in trying to do something new when everybody's running in the other direction. How do you deal with this kind of stuff, and how do you come out on the other side ahead of the game?
Well, number one, there's plenty of sleepless nights, or there's plenty of times when you're waking up at 3 a.m. going, oh my God, I didn't think of that, or I wish I had done this, or whatever. That goes with all business people, I believe. Look, the biggest, I would say, challenge that we face in our business is economic cycles. It's probably the biggest influencer on real estate, real estate purchasing habits. The fortunate thing for our business model, if you will, is that we deal with economies around the world. And we talk about here, the effect of flight capital. When there is economic disruption or political unrest in countries outside the United States, it often causes people with assets to want to move them to a safer environment. And we talk about real estate as a hard asset. It can be both an income-producing product, it can be a safe haven, or it can be shelter. So our challenge is always, how do we navigate through down cycles, or how do we manage and watch the cycles in other locations and use those opportunities to capitalize on the products that we have to offer? And for us, it always starts, you have to understand who you're dealing with. You have to know the not just the people, because relationships make everything. But you have to understand their culture as well. And our method has always been to incorporate and blend into our company people of matching ethnic backgrounds and cultural backgrounds, so that we have personnel that can talk and communicate in the same language, not just literally, but in every aspect. So, you know, if the basics of what we offer, our product, are the same. I mean, it's a beautiful building, amazing amenities, great location, the views are outstanding. Those things won't change somebody's willingness to buy if other influencers or economies or political issues are affecting them. So we maintain over a period of a long time and many years of doing business, we spend a lot of time on the relationships that we have with the people that access our customers. And then when our customers are actually here, we do everything we can to make the experience that they have a positive one. So hopefully that will wind up creating referral business, either from family or friends that they may have. And it's really good, just basic selling techniques that that we use over and over and apply over and over, regardless of how bad or how good things are. We try to think that we apply a consistent approach to not just finding our customers, but to treating them particularly well. And look, we build our organization based on the loyalty of hardworking young people. We ask a lot of them in terms of travel and networking, and consequently, they become one of our biggest resources. So maintaining an organization through up and down cycles has been the biggest challenge that I think we've faced, and then nurturing good young talent to be able to ultimately manage and run our company in the future. So I would tell you that as the various cycles have hit us year over year, even if the effects of, I remember very clearly the day that 9/11 happened, when the World Trade Centers went down, and how we had to look at what was going to happen, what were going to be the effects on the entire world as a result of that. And we found that we sat down and looked at what the potential was, what was going to happen, how we could fill needs that might have been created by the effects of the worldwide reaction. And we actually prospered. So I think in every negative cycle, there's opportunity. You said that earlier, and I agree with that. And I think our way of dealing with things has always been to identify who we could possibly do business with, target those people properly, service them with anything and everything they could possibly need in order to make a decision to purchase something that we had to offer, and then treat those people with the best experience they've ever had in purchasing property. And that's worked well for us, and that's been part of our success.
Yeah, it's certainly a theme that I have heard from many of my guests, making sure that you have the right people and you develop the right culture inside your company, manage the relationships that influence who your ideal customers are, and then treat your customers well and nurture them.
We talk about, you and I talked a little bit about, you know, the kind of people that have an effect, that have an influence on you. We've just gone through a series of seminars with a gentleman by the name of Emmett Logan, and he's a very low-key gentleman with a fascinating business background, and he's been coming and working with our team about developing exactly that, a clear and defined culture within our company. And while my partner and I are not spring chickens anymore, we're surrounded by young folks that are looking to make their career with us, and we're investing in them to ultimately give them the tools to be able to be great managers and business people for the future.
That's a great example. Who else has been an influencer for you in your career?
Well, you know, I go really right back to the very beginning. My first father-in-law, a gentleman by the name of Robert Siegel, still alive and living here in South Florida, but he really did teach me the business of condominium development, sales, marketing, promotion from the ground up. And I don't think there's a time that goes by that I don't reflect on something I learned from him. I think he'd be embarrassed if he heard this. I hope he'd be flattered, but the fact is that he gave me the education that I couldn't have gotten anywhere else, and it served me well for my entire career. Over the years, as I've had occasion to work with some of the biggest developers in the world, including our current presidential candidate, Donald Trump, you know, I've had a chance to work closely and see how others function. And I would say there's probably never been a relationship that I've had with a client that I haven't taken something away, something positive from. But two people that I would tell you that have had the greatest impact were, one, my father-in-law, Bob Siegel, and Emmett Logan is making a big impact on me at a late point in my life, where I still see an opportunity to make an impact in my business. And his influence is making a significant impact on how both my partner and I think and see the future.
Those are great examples. Philip, what are you working on now? What do we have to look forward to from your company? What's coming up?
Well, David, when my partner and I first started to develop the Latin American network, we saw a great opportunity. Obviously, a geography and a demographic of significant size. Today, we're starting to look at China, and we're starting to look at it from the standpoint that there's tremendous amount of affluence and disposable income with an interest in investing in the United States. Chinese have come to California, they've come to Chicago, they've come to New York. And now that they've reached New York and made significant investment, they're starting to eye Miami as a environment that they would like to be able to both invest, live, and vacation. So we think that, you know, this could be the very beginning of a huge market. We see the beginning foundation starting to take place. We're working directly with a huge company that has intentions to develop a very significant project here in downtown Miami. And my feeling is that over time, because I don't think there's anything fast with the Chinese, but I think over time they will grow to be a significant aspect of our development industry and our markets here in South Florida. And at the end of the day, that's where we're heading. So while we continue to nurture the markets that have been consistent and probably will always influence South Florida, the idea that we could open up a connection between Asia and South Florida would be a tremendous contribution. Plus, it would add another level of balance to not only the product that we develop, but to the outlet for where we can sell and market.
That does sound very exciting, and it sounds like we have a lot more to look forward to.
Absolutely. And we're just about to publish our 15th edition of our Miami report. It's outstanding. It's going to be posted digitally and available to anybody on isgworld.com. It's at the printer now, and probably within about 2 weeks we'll be able to set it up and make it available. And I think for anybody that has an interest in knowing and learning about what's happening in South Florida, it's a great resource. I think fascinating just to see how we've evolved as a global city.
Philip, how can listeners learn more about the resources that you offer, and how can they learn more about you and your company?
I refer anybody of interest to ISG, our website, isgworld.com, which is a constant evolving outlet of information and products that we offer and represent. But that's as good a start as any, and certainly anybody that wants to pick up a phone and call us, they're welcome to do so. That information is also on our website. We're very open, very hands-on, and love talking to people and meeting new people.
It sounds great. Last question: who do you know personally who is doing remarkable work?
It's a great question. There's two people right now down here that I'm tremendously impressed with. One is Kevin Maloney, who owns a company called Property Markets Group out of New York. We're doing 4 properties with him down here in South Florida, and another large one coming. And George Perez, the owner and president of the chairman of the Related Group here in Florida, is probably the most prolific developer in the industry. And I think building after building, he just continues to excel in providing amazing product, beautifully marketed, just a true leader and genius in the industry. So those two guys are doing great, amazing work, and I have the privilege of working with both of them.
They sound like really great examples. So thank you for mentioning them. Philip, it's been great having you on Smashing the Plateau today, talking about your own experiences, how you have smashed the plateau kind of time after time. You've been a great resource for our audience, and I wanted to thank you for being a guest. So thank you Philip, for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been Philip Spiegelman, the principal of International Sales Group, ISG World Miami. Thank you again, Philip, for joining
David,
us.
David, thank you as well. My pleasure. Enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.